Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, March 27th. Coronavirus in Midland. Midland Memorial Hospital, total confirmed cases rise to 7. Task Force, 180 tests still outstanding, by Caitlin Randall. The following are highlights from Midland County's Unified Task Force briefing on Thursday. There are 7 persons under investigation for COVID-19 at Midland Memorial Hospital, down from 15 on Wednesday. Of the 7, 5 are in the critical care unit and 2 are isolated in the medical unit. Dr. Larry Wilson said he attributed the decrease to receiving more test results that were negative and subsequently discharging those patients. Persons under investigation are inpatient at the hospital only. There are about 180 test results outstanding. 6 residents have tested positive for the coronavirus. Of those, 4 were tested in the hospital, 1 through the hospital's drive-through testing location, and 1 by a private practice. The hospital has received 64 negative results, Wilson said. The CDC has issued guidelines for when an individual can leave quarantine. Wilson said a patient who has been tested for COVID-19 or who self-quarantined after exposure or an onset of symptoms can leave their home if they've been symptom-free for 72 hours. A person can end their quarantine if they have a lingering cough, but they have been without a fever for 72 hours and seen an improvement in other symptoms, Wilson said. The person must also wait until at least a week after onset of their symptoms. At least one of the confirmed cases on Thursday is travel-related. A female in her 20s who tested positive is believed to have traveled outside of Texas, according to Whitney Craig with the Midland Health Department. It is unknown where the male in his 30s who tested positive was exposed. No community risk from at least 2 individuals who tested positive. An adolescent and a male in his 60s, not the patient who died on Tuesday, did not go into the community after the onset of their symptoms, Craig said. She said they were not contagious before symptoms appeared. All employers of those who tested positive have been notified. Craig said it is the decision of the employer whether to inform the other employees of possible exposure. Movements of 4 persons who tested positive are still under investigation. Craig said contact has begun for those individuals, but the department gives them time to remember places where they have been. This is a big undertaking. You find out you're positive for something that's so new. I think it's a lot to take in, and then you're getting slammed with, okay, where have you been, she said. Yes, we have to find the information in a timely manner, but we also have to let patients think on it so that we can get accurate information. It does no good for anyone in the community if the information is inaccurate that we gather from them. Emergency Management Department has requested assistance for West Texas Food Bank. Justin Bunch with the department said they've requested from the state 1 million units of food, canned food, hand sanitizer, and toilet paper for the food bank. He said it is up to the state whether they will fill that request. Bars may be policed for violating executive order. Mayor Patrick Payton said they received notice from the governor's office that many people throughout the state have been violating social gathering restrictions in bars. He said they may begin policing bars but didn't have details at this time. Midland Hospital District Board postpones sales tax election, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland County Hospital District Board will not hold a sales tax election in May. Directors voted Thursday to postpone the election to as early as June or possibly August. Hospital district officials plan to have conversations with Governor Greg Abbott's office to see what options are available. Hospital district official also must determine what date makes sense for the community and those running the campaign. In January, the hospital district approved holding a May 2nd election to raise the sales tax inside the city and county a quarter of 1%. The revenue generated from the tax collected, if approved by voters inside Midland County, will help make up for revenue lost because of expected cuts in federal funding. Hospital district officials started the meeting Thursday by saying county officials would not be able to manage a May 2nd election because of possible complications with the coronavirus pandemic. Early voting for that election would have started in about 3.5 weeks. Hospital officials had talked about delaying the election anyway because the governor earlier this month issued a proclamation encouraging local entities to defer elections to November. Following discussion, it was determined that the district didn't have to wait until November, but could set another date. Setting that date must either go through the courts or be approved by the governor's office. There also appears to be one other stipulation. The election couldn't be set within 30 days of runoff elections, which in Midland County will include a Republican primary runoff for the 142nd District Court. The runoff elections are scheduled for July 14th. There appear to be positives, according to the hospital district, for June and August election dates. Should the election be held in June and voters pass the sales tax increase, the district would start collecting the tax in October. If an August date is selected, the tax wouldn't be implemented until January, according to district officials citing the Texas Comptroller's Office. Should voters approve the ballot item, the tax increase could provide an extra $30 million for the hospital district to use for community health care services funding, including nonprofits, the Midland Community Health Care Services, contracted physicians, mental health services, ER calls, and Texas Tech University Health Science Center. Hospital district officials report that more than $40.147 million was spent in those areas in fiscal year 2019. Benefits of community health care services include compensation paid to more than 200 physicians, more than 75% of active medical staff. Officials said Thursday they expect some funding relief for the rest of this fiscal year from the federal government, but don't expect nearly enough to make up the tens of millions expected next fiscal year and over the 4 to 5 years. The board will meet again next week to provide more specifics about the plan moving forward and possibly even set a date for the sales tax election. A hero's welcome. MMH staff greeted by Heroes Work Here sign. A special sign greeted Midland Memorial Hospital workers Thursday as they arrived for their respective shifts. The sign says, "Heroes Work Here," and was gifted to the hospital by someone in the community, MMH CEO Russell Myers said. A great gift because of morale management and appreciation for the unusual circumstances that our employees are facing and the risks that they're taking every day by coming to work and doing their jobs, Meyer said. Keeping up people's morale and expressing our appreciation to them is a vital part of the effort. We know that we have people whose skills set are in short supply, and we need to keep them on the job and keep them motivated by expressing our appreciation for them to them for what they do. Restaurants like Opal's Table have delivered meals to the hospital staff and other kinds of supplies that have been needed, he said. Meyer said the state of Texas has 974 confirmed COVID-19 cases as of Thursday. There are 6 confirmed cases in Midland County. There have been 12 deaths in the state from the virus and 1 death at MMH. Coronavirus cases and testing. There are 13 patients in the MMH critical care unit. 5 of those 13 are in a separate cohort and are persons under investigation for COVID-19. Meyer said they have a segregated unit and there are 8 persons under investigation there. 13 patients as of Thursday morning were persons under investigation for COVID-19. The age range of persons under investigation ranges from the youngest patient is a pediatric patient, which means they are under 18, and the oldest patient is 81 years old. We did hear from our primary laboratory vendor yesterday, Meyer said. We understand that the delay in test results have been the result of computer problems in their main lab. They got about 4 days' worth of downtime, and now they're having to manually report. We're hoping that those results come soon. The hospital and its affiliates have sent out 192 tests to labs. There have been 26 negative results and 6 positive results. For patients for whom there seems to be some more urgency, we have actually re-swabbed and sent the samples to another lab to get more rapid turnaround, Meyer said. Meyer said there has been some confusion about lab reporting. A typical virus panel has multiple viruses that are named coronavirus on it, Meyer said. There are actually 4 that are typically tested for, and as you've heard before, those are associated with a common cold. Those viruses testing negative and showing up on a typical viral panel does not mean that the patient does not have the COVID-19 virus. The actual name of the virus that causes COVID-19 is SARS-CoV-2. Meyer said the regular coronavirus negatives don't mean that someone doesn't have it, and that's a point they are clarifying to anyone who has access to lab results. 68 nurse and masks. Meyer said officials have seen a lot of phone traffic on the 68 nurse hotline. As of last night, we have additional capacity online, and we're about 1 week away from completing that entire project to dramatically and permanently increase our phone capacity, as well as improve our ability to allow employees to work from home on our computer backbone, Meyer said. He said that project has taken a lot of time and effort for the hospital staff and was funded substantially by the Scarborough Foundation. Meyer said the clinical pharmacists and infectious disease doctor have developed a protocol for the drug combination of hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin. The hospital is actively using this protocol now. He said suppliers are beginning to come through with some of the mask orders. Our mask supply is holding as we don't have a huge number of patients in the house, Meyer said. We've had a tremendous response from the community for donating masks. We have some folks who sew for us, have changed their work, and are sewing masks. We're using those throughout the facility. On Wednesday, they are beginning to put a mask on every patient who arrives at the emergency department. We're trying to be as cautious as we can, both with the potential for exposure of the people around those patients they encounter as they come into the facility, and especially the exposure potential for our employees, he said. Meyer said that MMH has started reporting its capacity and census to the state every day along with other hospitals. This information will be available to the Texas Division of Emergency Management. The state has also asked MMH to report their in-house lab testing for COVID-19 when they start in a few days, Meyer said. It's a pretty big deal, Meyer said. I think the most important thing, as we've said every day, we've had anywhere from 10 to 15 patients in those persons under investigation cohorts that we're managing as if they are positive for the virus, but we don't know if they are positive or not. I think if we could confirm that some of those patients are negative, then we could move them to a different environment. We could treat them somewhat differently. Meyer said having test results back could possibly free up rooms for patients who are positive, and the staff who are caring for them would have some peace of mind. The unknown is one of our greatest enemies now, both with the hospital patients who have symptoms and for the whole community, Meyer said. He said the hospital testing won't solve everything because the hospital won't have enough volume to test broadly or really confirm how many people in the community have COVID-19. He did say that more people are coming to the hospital, they will be able to turn around their tests faster and know what they're dealing with. Sanitizer donation. Saul Vila, Kelly Gabriel, president of True Chemical Solutions, Brandon W. Hodges, and Tim Harry deliver chemical solutions of hand sanitizer Thursday to the Midland Police Department. True Chemical Solutions partnered with Fasken Oil and Ranch to buy the solutions in bulk to make a WHO-approved sanitizer solution. OPD, Odessa man in critical condition after Wednesday crash. An Odessa man is in critical condition following a major crash that occurred early Wednesday morning in southwest Odessa. On Wednesday at 1:02 a.m., an OPD officer observed a silver Chrysler 300 traveling westbound in the 2500 block of West 8th Street at a high rate of speed. The officer attempted to conduct a traffic stop, but the vehicle refused to stop and continued westbound on 8th Street. The officer terminated the stop and the vehicle later crashed into a pole located on the northeast corner of 8th Street and West Loop 338. The driver of the Chrysler was an 18-year-old Odessan. He was transported to a local hospital and later airlifted to a hospital in Lubbock with life-threatening injuries. There were no reports of any other injuries and the investigation continues. Bringing the flavor. Volunteers Anaya Walton, Miran McGee, and Shirley Smith fill small containers with salsa at the Electric Flava Cafe Thursday as they help prepare beef tacos, beans, and rice to give out to area children as part of a free lunch program. Owner Maleka McGee and other volunteers have been doing the past 2 weeks. Today will be the final day they will hand out meals.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, March 27th. Five tremors recorded near Mentone in 1 day, from staff reports. The U.S. Geological Survey on Thursday recorded 5 earthquakes near Mentone. The quakes ended with a pair in the 1 p.m. hour. The last one happened at 1:52 p.m. The 3.1 magnitude quake took place 24.8 miles west of Mentone at a depth of 3.7 miles. The one prior happened at 1:29 p.m. The 3.0 magnitude quake happened 26.7 miles west of Mentone at a depth of 3.1 miles. Mentone is located in Loving County, about 20 miles north of Pecos. The other 3 earthquakes earlier in the day started with the 3.8 magnitude quake, which hit around 3:52 a.m., around 32 miles west of Mentone. That tremor took place at a depth of 5.2 miles, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The USGS reported a second quake at 10:16 a.m., with a 5.0 magnitude about 26.72 miles west of Mentone. The second quake had a depth of 5.28 miles. A third quake was recorded about an hour later at 11:16 a.m. with a 3.0 magnitude and a depth of 3.1 miles. 26 earthquakes have been reported in the past 30 days with a magnitude greater than 1.5 around the West Texas area, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. Midland is only larger Texas area left with $2 gas, by Stuart Doreen. Midland is the only larger metropolitan area in Texas with gas prices averaging $2 or more, according to AAA Texas. While the average price of gas dropped 11 cents in Midland and across the state, drivers in Midland will fill their tanks in a metropolitan area where the average price is $2. And that, according to AAA Texas, puts gas in Midland 6 cents more than Odessa at $1.94, 19 cents above the average across the state, $1.81, and 50 cents more than Sherman-Denison, which has the lowest average in Texas, at $1.50. Here are some things to know from this week's gas prices report. Midland-Odessa still is higher than the rest of the state. There are two communities with prices above $1.90 a gallon, Midland and Odessa. The next lowest price is $1.86 in Lubbock, Galveston, Texas City, and Laredo. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Averages across the region vary. AAA Texas reported the following average prices across the region: $1.71 in Amarillo, a decrease of 13 cents. $1.75 in Abilene, a decrease of 16 cents. $1.79 in San Angelo, a decrease of 11 cents. $1.79 in El Paso, a decrease of 10 cents. And $1.86 in Lubbock, a decrease of 8 cents. Comparisons year over year. In Midland, the average price of gas is down 59 cents year over year. That trails the 61-cent drop in Odessa, the 62-cent drop across the state, and the 98-cent drop in Sherman-Denison, which is located northeast of Dallas. In Sherman-Denison, the price dropped 21 cents this past week. What AAA Texas says: as the price of crude oil drops to levels not seen since the early 2000s, gasoline prices are following suit. In Texas, the statewide average has not been $1.80 for a gallon of regular unleaded fuel since 2016. Crude oil is the biggest driver of the less expensive gas, as it counts for nearly 60% of the price at the pump. Gas prices are dropping at a time of year when they normally increase as the weather warms up and motorists would typically head out to enjoy spring break.
Curbside Midland. While the dining rooms are closed, these businesses remain ready to serve you through carryout or delivery. Online, www.curbsidemidland.com. Check out area businesses that are offering curbside pickup: Mulberry Cafe, The Hemingway, Exceptional Cigars, Very Fine Wines, Tall City Brewing Company, Gerardo's Grill and Cantina, Cafe at the Gardens, Aldridge Gardens, Cancun Bar and Grill, Mexican Restaurant, Texas Sun Winery, Hand Cafe, Dickie's Barbecue Pit, Cork and Pig Tavern, Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwiches, Riley's Bar and Grill, Red Oak Kitchen, Susie's South 40 Confections. Curbside Midland is an opportunity for you to still shop at your favorite restaurants and retail without having to enter the store. We've compiled a directory so you can keep track. Also visit curbsideandrews.com and curbsideodessa.com.
Local. Midland Health Center receives initial $79,000 in coronavirus relief funds. Midland Community Healthcare Services was awarded a federal grant totaling $79,031 to help fight the spread of the novel coronavirus, U.S. Senator John Cornyn announced today. The funding, which was appropriated by Congress earlier this month, comes through the Department of Health and Human Services. While Texans continue doing everything they can in response to the spread of the coronavirus, we in Washington should give them everything they need to succeed, Cornyn said. I applaud area leaders for their work to obtain these grants, and I'm grateful to the Trump administration for making health centers in Midland a priority. Grocery store hours. Albertsons Market, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday, 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Customers 60+, orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Meeting today. Hospital District, 11:45 a.m., Administration Boardroom. MISD is serving meals. Midland ISD Child Nutrition Services, CNS, will provide free breakfast and lunch to students who want them. Students do not have to be on free or reduced lunch to receive a meal. Meals are grab and go and may be picked up at any of the locations. Also, academic enrichment packets may be picked up at the meal sites. More information is available at www.midlandisd.net/COVID-19. Breakfast will be served 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. and lunch will be served 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the following locations. Elementary schools: Bonham, East Parking Drive, Bowie, West Parking, Bunch, East Bus Drive, Burnett, East Parking Drive, Bush, North Bus Parent Drive, De Zavala, East Parent Drive, Fannin, West Parent Drive, Franks, East Service Loop Drive, Great House, West Service Loop Drive, Henderson, West Parent Drive, Lamar, East Service Loop Drive, Long, East Street Parking, Milam, East Street Parking, Parker, West Bus Drive, Pease, West Parking Drive, Rusk, East Bus Drive, Santa Rita, West Drive, Scarborough, South Parking Drive, South North Street Curb, Travis, South Parent Drive, Yarborough, North Bus Drive. Secondary schools: San Jacinto, East Bush Drive, Goddard, East Staff Parking, Midland High, A Street, Band Hall Service Loop, South Interstate 20, Mobile Sites, Yellow MISD Bus, Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 Highway 349, Valley View Baptist Church, 5500 FM 1213, Twin Oaks Mobile Home Park, 5200 South County Road 1200. Today in History. Today is Friday, March 27, the 87th day of 2020. There are 279 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history. On March 27, 2006, Al-Qaeda conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui testified at his federal trial that he was supposed to hijack a fifth airplane on September 11, 2001 and fly it into the White House. On this date, in 1513, Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de León sighted present-day Florida. In 1973, The Godfather won the Academy Award for Best Picture of 1972, but its star Marlon Brando refused to accept his Oscar for Best Actor. In 1975, construction began on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, which was completed 2 years later. Today's birthdays: movie director Quentin Tarantino is 57, singer Mariah Carey is 50.
Obituaries from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, March 27th. Jerry Dean Williams of Midland died peacefully in his sleep Saturday, March 21st, at Terrace West Nursing Home. He was born March 11th, 1938, in Draw, Linn County, Texas, to Carl and Bertha Williams. Jerry is survived by his wife and four children, seven grandchildren, and five great-grandchildren. A memorial service is planned for later this year. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. LaDoyce Lambert passed on February 19th at Baylor University Medical Center at Dallas due to health complications. He was 84. Born July 30th, 1935 in Cannon, Texas, to John Herman and Mary Will Lambert. The family has decided to reschedule services due to the current state of conditions with the coronavirus. Memorials may be directed to the First Methodist Church Foundation or a charity of choice. Survivors include his daughter, Amy Lambert Lee, and husband, Rob of Dallas. One granddaughter, sisters-in-law, Robbie Lambert of Lubbock and Jan Bash, and husband, Vince of Midland. Brother-in-law, Jim Hicks, and wife, Linda of Midland. Nephews, nieces, and cousins. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, March 27th, 2020. Unemployment skyrockets amid crisis. COVID-19 and price of oil hit Permian Basin hard. Nearly 3.3 million Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week, almost five times the previous record set in 1982, amid a widespread economic shutdown caused by the coronavirus. The surge in weekly applications was a stunning reflection of the damage the viral outbreak is inflicting on the economy. Filings for unemployment aid generally reflect the pace of layoffs. 2 weeks ago, 16,176 Texans filed for new unemployment benefits. But 1 week later, the number has jumped to 155,657 out-of-work people filing for unemployment. In Odessa, unemployment numbers and data on jobs lost during the pandemic have yet to be released. Willie Taylor, Workforce Solutions Permian Basin CEO, said a large number of the calls coming in are from people filing for unemployment after being laid off. He said that the workforce has seven call centers and they are overloaded with phone calls. Taylor said the Texas Workforce Commission is trying to add 100 employees to their staff across the state and are working on adding telephone lines. Taylor said that due to Governor Greg Abbott's COVID-19 order that they had to close their offices to the public, they do have people working in the office who are still trying to match people up with jobs. Taylor added that people who are trying to file for unemployment should try to call the local number, but that with the high volume of calls, the system's on overload. They are also looking into some extended hours on Saturdays. Affected workers can also file online at tinyurl.com/TG6DZHB. Nationally, revenue has collapsed at restaurants, hotels, movie theaters, gyms, and airlines. Auto sales are plummeting, and car makers have closed factories. Most such employers face loan payments and other fixed costs, so they're cutting jobs to save money. As job losses mount, some economists say the nation's unemployment rate could approach 13% by May. By comparison, the highest jobless rate during the Great Recession, which ended in 2009, was 10%. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said that oil prices did drop due to the virus, but mostly because of the price war between Saudi Arabia and the Russians. It's had a big impact on the employment situation a lot of people are facing in Odessa throughout the Permian Basin. He said that he's talked with many small business owners who are having to make tough decisions, as well as those who've been recently let go or have had their hours cut during this time. Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts Glenn Heger reported Thursday that the unemployment rate in Texas is currently around 9%, and Landgraf echoed Heger's words, saying that when we check back in the next week, we should be in the double digits, which is dramatically higher than it was 2 weeks ago. Landgraf said that as of Wednesday, the Texas Workforce Commission received around 50,000 phone calls across the state, in contrast to their average of around 13,000 calls in a normal week. Governor Greg Abbott requested access to interest-free federal loans to help Texas pay unemployment claims on Thursday, which could provide additional resources for the state to continue to cover unemployment benefits. The Houston Chronicle detailed that Texas has less than 6 months of reserves to pay unemployment insurance at recession-level rates. U.S. Department of Labor data details from the second quarter of 2019, which is the most recent available, and that more than 150,000 Texans filed for unemployment benefits last week. Landgraf said since the coronavirus outbreak, West Texans have been hit with an employment drop, and whether it's a pharmacist or a restaurant owner, Landgraf said that he's passing ideas to Abbott from those struggling, and he thinks that information has been helpful. I'm in constant contact with Governor Abbott and his staff and advising the governor on what we're seeing out here in Odessa, what we're seeing in the Permian Basin. Landgraf said that while the Texas legislature is not in session and Texans are in the middle of a declared health emergency, Governor Abbott is leading the state's battle against COVID-19, and I believe that he's showing tremendous leadership. As the legislature, I don't really have an executive role to play in this, but I have found many ways to serve West Texas as we fight the virus, so that's what I'm spending most of my time these days doing. Landgraf said he's trying to do multiple things, from connecting hospital and healthcare workers with resources from the state of Texas, whether that is personal protective equipment or testing and collection supplies, or just getting answers from state agencies, connecting local folks on the front lines with information and resources that could be helpful on the state level. Landgraf has been active through Facebook and his website, where he has listed COVID-19 information so that people can go to one page and have links to multiple local, state, and federal resources, as well as information about how to donate or sell helpful items to the state of Texas. Landgraf said he and his team have made a concerted effort to keep West Texans updated with transparent information about the spread of the virus and about state resources that are available to help people. In this environment, it's very important to be transparent and let people work with the facts, he said. This is a very dire public health situation, and it can be overcome. But you know the best way to do that is to let the public have access to all the information that's available so that everybody can know what their role is. We can take action on facts that are available, and I think that's very important, whether you're a decision maker or just someone who's trying to get through one day at a time. One of the early victories, Landgraf said, was working with Abbott to cancel the STAR exam this year, saying that the last thing that students, teachers, and parents need to worry about during a health crisis is standardized testing. It's provided a peace of mind for a lot of people and allowed them to focus their energy on other things, he said. Those are the types of steps that we're working to duplicate. Landgraf said that he can do a better job when he knows concerns that West Texans may have. He has been reached through phone calls, text messages, emails, and messages through Facebook from constituents about their concerns, ideas, recommendations, and in a lot of cases, he said it has been about their fears that people have about their jobs or their families. Landgraf said that he is practicing the CDC guidelines for social distancing and cleanliness, and that he advises others to do their part as well. Tough times don't last, but tough people do. I really do believe that as a lifelong West Texan, that we are uniquely qualified to overcome these challenges if we stay smart, if we stay tough, and if we stay healthy. Information on COVID-19 broken down into state, local, and other resources can be found on Landgraf's website at tinyurl.com/SV4 AO2R. ECISD Director of Nursing resigns, by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD Director of Nursing Laura Matthew has resigned under protest due to requirements placed on her by the district in connection with the coronavirus pandemic. Matthew had served as director for 18 years. Superintendent Scott Murray said in a phone interview that he could not comment on a personnel matter. Her resignation letter was sent to Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support, Alicia Siverson, who apparently asked for Matthew's resignation to be effective March 26th. Matthew's letter said she wanted to resign March 27th. Murray said what he could say was, at this time in the life of the school system and community, having all hands on deck is important. Having all of our employees performing their job functions is critical so that we can effectively serve the needs of our community, Murray said. It's important that we are all doing what we need to do to get through this crisis. Asked if he would want someone to put themselves or others at risk, Murray said, "In our current situation, we are following all of the CDC guidelines. Those are clearly outlined on the CDC website, and we've put all of those practices and procedures in place throughout our organization. And the whole reason we've done that is to prevent any of us, whether any employees or any students or any family members, from being at risk at all. But we do not want to be a part of the transmission of this virus within our own community. In fact, we want to be the opposite. We actually want to be a part of the solution." He said that's why the district is taking the action steps they have. "That's why we're not in school today. That's why most of our employees are working from home. That's why we're serving meals from the curb instead of in our buildings. So the actions that we are taking are to keep everybody safe, our students, our families, our employees, everybody." Quoting from Matthew's letter, "It is terrible to resign under these conditions with the coronavirus pandemic and feel a need to go on record as to the reason. As you know, per our discussion, I consider it unwise for me to take temperatures every day at the administration building per your request. I also have offered to teach everyone at the administration building how to take an ear temp. It is simple and would mean that no one would have to be exposed to the virus. I ask you this because I am in a high-risk category, according to the CDC. I am 67 years old, and I have congestive heart failure, CHF. I would have no issue providing you with all my medical records to prove this. My CHF came on about 8 years ago as a result of chemotherapy treatment I had to take when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. This is simply a fact. I cannot take a risk that I feel is totally unnecessary because you are asking," Matthew's letter said. She said the nurses in her department have asked her if they have to expose themselves, and she has told them that if they set up a system to teach their cafeteria staff and others how to take their own temperature and log it every day, they did not have to expose themselves. "So when you ask me to designate a nurse or a school health aide who could go to the administration building every day in my place, I told you and firmly believe that no one should be asked to expose themselves on an everyday basis. I will never ask anyone I supervise to do something I would not do or that I felt was unsafe," the letter said. "I have tried to explain to you the medical reasons, and I have asked you on what grounds you are asking that temps be taken every day at the administration building. You have said it is a directive of the superintendent. The TEA issued some guidelines that focused around the possibility of contamination or spread of the virus from staff to the public, since the staff was putting educational packets together and giving out food. You never mentioned that the people coming into the administration were in contact with the public, so I am at a loss for understanding the medical grounds for taking temps at the administration building, and I remain convinced that a good compromise would be to teach everyone to take their own temps. I can only think that you want me to leave and that you are using this opportunity for that purpose. We have had our differences, but I did not think it would ever come to this, the letter said. I don't think you understand the science or medical reasoning pertaining to the spread of this virus. I am a registered nurse who has been practicing since 1974, and I have an advanced degree in public health. I am prepared to render a better decision on this. It is a pity that you will not take my skill and knowledge under consideration. There is no reason to ask people, either myself or others, to take unnecessary risk and face possible exposure to coronavirus. It is also a pity that I am resigning for this reason. Resigning for this reason is senseless, and I am resigning under protest, the letter said. It ends with, "Goodbye, Alicia." Murray said ECISD is starting a new protocol Monday in all the district buildings that includes taking everyone's temperature. Most of our schools are doing that today. In fact, my first stop this morning was at one of our elementary schools, and I witnessed the nurse taking the temperature of each of the employees as they were coming to work this morning. That's a practice at our schools, Murray said. Starting Monday, we will be elevating that practice throughout our system to ensure that every employee who comes to work is checked to make sure that we are healthy, because we serve the public and we want to make sure that if we have any interaction with the public or any interaction with each other, we need to make sure that we are safe and healthy. This includes the administration building. Quick hits. COVID-19 cases. The Texas Department of State Health Services website offers numbers updated daily by 12 p.m. on cases of COVID-19 coronavirus confirmed cases in Texas. Reported data is current as of 8 p.m. the previous day. As of 8 p.m. Wednesday, it showed 21,424 tested statewide, and there were total Texas positive cases, 1,396. Total Texas deaths, 18. 92 Texas counties had positive cases of COVID-19. Midland County had 6 confirmed cases and has reported 1 death. Crane County had 1. Dallas County had 303. There were no reported confirmed cases in Ector, although the Ector County Health Department was aware of 48 residents being tested as of 8 p.m. Thursday. Many Texas cities and counties have issued shelter-in-place orders, including Waco, Dallas, Hidalgo County, and others. In the United States, the CDC.gov site showed 68,440 total cases and 994 deaths as of 4 p.m. Wednesday. The data includes both confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19. Visit the Texas site at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Other Corona news. Meals on Wheels officials have handed out red hands that clients can put in their windows if they need some type of assistance. Call 333-6451 or email volunteer@mowodessa.com. The Administrative Professionals Luncheon and Style Show, sponsored by the Pilot Club of Odessa, has been canceled. Call 432-366-1009 or email tjnolan@grandecom.net. Also, the Pilot Club of Odessa garage sale, scheduled for today and Saturday, has been postponed. Midland Community Healthcare Services was awarded a federal grant totaling $79,031 to help fight the spread of the novel coronavirus. The funding, which was appropriated by Congress earlier this month, comes through the Department of Health and Human Services. TXU Energy is contributing $10,000 to the West Texas Food Bank to support the organization's COVID-19 response efforts. The donation is also made possible through TXU Energy's sister company, Luminant, which operates the Odessa Ector Power Plant. Republican congressional nominee August Pfluger, Republican San Angelo, announced he would be turning his campaign efforts towards assisting those in Texas' 11th congressional district who've been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Pfluger has added a new resource page to his campaign website, www.augustpfluger.com/COVID. That includes a listing of all federal, state, and local offices working to respond to COVID-19, as well as tools for small businesses and job seekers who've been affected by the virus.
Hi, this is Michael. I'm going to jump in on this reading of today's Odessa American to describe a couple of photos that appear on the front page. The top photo, well, both of these photos are regarding the Ector Theater's renovation. And the top photo, we see the shot taken from the stage and looking out toward the seats. All of the seats have some sort of drop cloths over them. And then on the stage, you see a workbench with several boards and different tools and products that they're using for their work. The stage itself looks like it's covered in paper to protect the stage. There is a long extension cord that appears coming from behind the photo out to the front of the stage, on which sits a shop vac. And then to the right of the shop vac, there is a big bucket of some kind of stuff that they're using in the construction. The picture on the bottom of the front page shows four workmen that are working in a room. It also has a workbench. There's lots of saws. Someone is sweeping the floor. Someone looks like he's working on a wall. And then another person looks like he's looking down at something on the floor. And again, there's several tools and things of that nature that are in the picture. Here's the caption accompanying the photos. The auditorium of the Ector Theater nears completion of its renovation on Thursday afternoon, 5 months behind its projected completion date of November 2019. The theater's original cast iron seats have been restored and reinstalled, as well as reusing some of the original fittings and instruments to bring part of the original theater's history into the new. And then on the other photo, the caption is, construction workers practice social distancing while working on renovations in the lobby of the Ector Theater on Thursday afternoon. The contracting crew who is working on transforming the Ector Theater is one of the few professions that has still been able to work throughout the virus outbreak, despite concerns for health and safety in other types of businesses. Photo credit, Eli Hartman, Odessa American.
Former Odessans photos featured in Texas Monthly. Mackenzie Smith Kelly photographed the cover of Texas Monthly's March issue and a 10-page spread written by Pat Sharp covering the state's best new restaurants in Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, Fort Worth, and Houston. Smith Kelly is an alumnus of Permian High School, Odessa College, studied photography with Steve Goff and Mark Swindler and the University of Texas Permian Basin, where she graduated with a bachelor's degree in sociology in 2006. Mac, as she goes by now, was a member of the Kaleidoscope Company at the Permian Playhouse and the Satin Strings and Cantori Choir at Permian High School. Smith Kelly lived and worked in New York City for 10 years with a quick stint in Odessa in 2012 before moving to Austin in 2016, where she lives now. She focuses her lens on storytelling through food and connections made at the table. Her work has been published in The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine, Oprah Magazine, Culture Mag, Lux Magazine, and various online publications. She also runs The World in a Pocket, www.theworldinapocket.com, an online project dedicated to celebrating the world through the lens of a dumpling, or a samosa, empanada, etc. The World in a Pocket was a finalist in the 2019 Savour Blog Awards in the category of Most Groundbreaking Voice. Midland Company Comes to Aid of MCH by Michael Bauer. To help stop the spread of the coronavirus, hospitals are making sure they have plenty of necessary supplies, especially hand sanitizer. Imperative Chemical Partners made sure that the Medical Center Health System would have enough hand sanitizer. Shoot, they even delivered it. On Wednesday, the Midland-based company delivered 330 gallons of hand sanitizer to the hospital that they made using a World Health Organization formula. They contacted our materials department to help out and donate, since there is such a shortage of supplies of hand sanitizer across the country, said MCHS Director of Public Relations, Trevor Tankersley. I believe Imperative Chemicals is familiar with the process of making hand sanitizer. The WHO has some guidelines on making it, and they delivered it to us Wednesday. Imperative is a provider of specialty chemicals, chemical program management, and in-field technical support, primarily to operators and midstream companies. With the added supply of hand sanitizer, the health center is glad to be able to remain in decent position to maintain an adequate supply. We did have hand sanitizer, but we're always looking to the future, and we knew that would eventually become an issue, Tankersley said. So we were looking at alternative ways, either to purchase hand sanitizer or make hand sanitizer, and this gift came out of thin air to relieve that pressure off us right now. The approximate worth of the amount of hand sanitizer that was donated, Tankersley said, is $75,000. It helps tremendously, he said. It gives us a drastic improvement of supply on hand sanitizer that we don't have to worry about. It also gives us quite a bit of money in the circumstances. This is quite a big deal, and we are truly thankful for the support and for this donation. This is a lot of hand sanitizer, and it will help us tremendously. The donation from Imperative came as a response to Medical Center's Facebook post asking for donations. We had put out a post of how to donate supplies on our social media pages, Tankersley said. They saw that and reached out to our Director of Materials Management and let her know that they were willing to do this. It happened very quickly. The public hospital is still asking for donations, both supplies and monetary. Those who are interested in donating supplies, including masks, gloves, etc., can contact Cheryl McQueen, Director of Materials Management, at mcqueen@echd.org. Those who are interested in making a monetary donation are to call Rita Mata at 432-640-1269 or visit mchodessa.com/mchs-foundation/. Those who are donating are asked to choose COVID-19 on the donation drop-down menu. All funds raised will go directly to help fund necessities for the patients and medical staff during the pandemic.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.